Greetings and salutations, folks. Back on Indy Cornrows courtside, I'm Pierce Cavanaugh, joined by Chris Goff. Chris, a return engagement for the Pacers scribe of Indy sports legends. Good to have you back so soon.
Hey, glad to be here. It's the NBA season, right? We made it through.
Yeah, the dog days are over. We're finished with that, and we've got actual storylines to talk about. It's a little exciting.
Oh, for sure.
I want to start just right off the bat, because we've been really hunting and manufacturing storylines ever since the Pacers drafted Solomon Hill and finished up Summer League. You know, Luis Scola was a acquisition. That was some big news. But for the most part, we've been just waiting and seeing, and that's no longer the case. We've got a preseason game in a couple days against the Chicago Bulls. I think it's actually on Saturday. I'm not sure when this will be posted, so hopefully this is immediately relevant to that contest. Derrick Rose is going to play, and Danny Granger's back too.
Yeah, that should be an interesting game. I think there will be a lot of Chicago Bulls fans that come down, and a lot of the national media should be in there, you know, getting a look at Derrick Rose. But what I'm interested in, really, with that preseason opener, to tell you the truth, I'm looking forward to seeing how Frank Vogel handles the rotations and seeing the different combinations that he uses. It sounds like he's pretty committed to going through much of the preseason with his two main units, keeping them together to build some cohesion. He seems to not have a lot mapped out. I think he'll mix and match some. At the same time, it's a tricky battle for him getting that cohesion between the first unit and the second unit, or on the other hand, figuring out what really are the best combinations and experimenting. It's a fine line between experimenting or trying to develop that cohesion. And Vogel, he's been pretty honest about taking the next month and seeing how it all shakes out, what the best units are, what the best rotations are. I just had a discussion with Larry Bird about this, and it sounds like as an organization, they are considering, you know, playing four forwards at one time in the lineup. Paul, Danny, Chris, and either David or Luis. So that's something new, and that's something to keep an eye on in the preseason.
That was actually my next question, because Frank Vogel has made no bones about the fact that he wants to keep things big and go right from Roy Hibbert to Jan Mahimi, and that was really effective defensively last year. That's what everyone was excited about when Scola came in, because it looked like it had a chance to go right from West and Hibbert to Scola and Mahimi as a strong bench unit, and now they're thinking about changing that. I talked to Ian Levy and Tim Donahue earlier about this about a month and a half ago, and they were just interested to see, with Luis Scola coming in, if it was going to be just that, and they were wondering where Copeland was going to play. Now it seems like the question's flipped. Is there enough defense in that second unit if those guys all play together?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's definitely something to losing Sam Young and Tyler Hansbrough means that second unit may lose a notch on D. But I think the whole point of the offseason moves that they made with C.J. Watson and Chris Copeland, Luis Scola, those guys are all average or below defenders. The point of the offseason, the whole agenda with that, and I talked to Bird about this too, is to make the bench sort of an offensive unit. So they believe in the defense. They think the defense is going to be there. As long as Roy Hibbert and Paul George are around, they're going to be okay defensively. But the offense had a long way to go to where it could compete with Miami, and I think they want the bench to help make up some of that difference. So, and it should be able to do that, because that could be a really, really strong unit. Could actually be one of the best benches in the NBA if Danny Granger comes off the bench. So we'll see what happens, but there probably will be a little bit of a drop-off on that second unit.
I feel the same way about the bench depth. And don't get me wrong, I'm excited about Chris Copeland being in there for Tyler Hansbrough. I like Scola better as an individual player than I like Jan, or I liked Hansbrough. And, you know, really across the board they've upgraded, but I'm curious to see if they'll be able to get things together especially for the start of the season. I mean, it's right around the corner. We've got preseason in a day, and these guys have not yet set foot on the floor together in a game situation. And that, I thought, was the big strength of this team last year, that everybody knew each other pretty well.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of players. Just this whole roster is just full of guys who could play. I mean, when you think about Orlando Johnson and Solomon Hill might not see any minutes. I mean, those are two pretty nice players for young guys. And, you know, I've always heard, you know, is there such a thing as too much depth? I don't think there is such a thing as too much depth. It depends on the personnel. That's going to be one of the stories of this year, is whether people on this team can get over the stigma of starting, not starting. Because I'm telling you, people, I don't know if this is going to happen, but people need to prepare themselves for Danny Granger to come off the bench. And it's nothing against Danny. Danny Granger looks fabulous. Paul George the other day called him a 30-point scorer. But the way this is shaping out, and if you look at how this is shaping out from a strategic point of view, Danny Granger might fit best on that second unit that we were just talking about. That can be an incredibly dynamic unit with Danny, Luis, Chris, CJ, and Jan. You know, right now, Vogel, I think, is envisioning David and Chris locking up the four spot, and Granger coming in behind Paul, going against lesser defenders, being aggressive with when he wants to score that ball. I just really like the way Granger and Copeland, you like Copeland, I like Copeland. I think the way Granger and Copeland can work together coming off screens, that unit can be absolutely devastating. And if you think of that unit's going to be going against other teams' second units, which are theoretically not as good of players as the starters. So that could really turn out to be an advantage, and it's all going to hinge on whether or not the guys can get over that, hey, I'm not starting. You know, as Vogel says, what does it matter if, let's think back to George Hill 2 years ago. Yeah, George Hill was a bench player, but he averaged 26 minutes a game. He'd play 14 minutes in the first half, 12 minutes in the second half, or vice versa. But yet, he's a bench player. Okay, that makes him worse, supposedly. You know, it's all about the units and how they fit into the style of play. And if people can buy into that second unit really becoming a dynamic force, whether it's Danny or Lance who joins it ultimately, then I think the Pacers are onto something. And I still think that Danny is... if he was the one to come off the bench, would finish the games. You know, I do. I think the fourth quarter unit would be Paul, Danny, George, David, and Roy. I mean, but there are a lot of options. There's no doubt about it.
That's a lot to really look over. I kind of like the idea of the closers being the way they are, and I like the starters the other way. I think both units can be successful. But I want to get back to Copeland, because he is a different player than we've seen the past couple years even. I mean, really the closest comparison I could think of in recent memory would be Troy Murphy. And that's just because he's a power forward who shot threes. Copeland is nothing like Troy Murphy as a player overall. He's a unique guy. Is there a chance that he is as big a bust as Gerald Green? Is there a chance that he's a big contributor as everyone's expecting him to be? I mean, because I've seen some buzz both ways from fans on him, fans that are a little nervous on Chris Copeland.
Yeah, there's no doubt that there is at least a chance that Chris Copeland was a one-year wonder because he played in New York last year. Mike Woodson spread the floor and shot a lot of three-pointers, and that's not what Indiana does. But I think Copeland has his mind right, and talking with Copeland's agent, he thinks that it's really going to help Chris defensively not to get out of that New York system where they switched everything, okay? And Copeland would end up a lot of times on a guard just because they switch, and that's not a good situation for him. So his theory is kind of that Chris playing a position, being a power forward, knowing what he's going to be doing on defense every possession, playing in man-to-man will be a real benefit to him. Because that's the question about Chris Copeland. Everybody in camp so far is very impressed with how he shoots it. He can fill it up from outside. You know, the question is, can he defend? And he's not the rebounder that Troy Murphy was. Can he just be solid on that end of the floor to allow his offense to make a difference? I believe in Copeland. He's a unique player, and I think he's going to be successful, but time will tell.
I just get nervous when I see guys come from very lax systems to more structured ones, where there's already a pecking order in place, and coming in, he's not going to be at the top of it. Because last year, basically, just from watching the Knicks, when he got in and he touched the ball, he was going to shoot pretty much every time. And I don't think that's going to be the case in Indiana. If he has trouble adjusting to that, I think that puts not only him in a rough situation, but the players with him as well. Because Danny Granger and Chris Copeland as two guys who are looking to shoot, that might take away from some of the other offensive contributors in that unit. If you're talking about having Scola on the floor, having CJ as a spot-up guy, there are a lot of options, but a lot of ways this can go wrong.
Yeah, well, I think when you talk about the Pacers' offense, I think, coming into this year, I think what is the most important goal? And besides just being more successful, that goes without saying, I think they need to take some pressure off Paul George doing what he had to do in the playoffs, which is having to shake guys off and create things with the ball. And I think George Hill needs to be more a part of the offense, more than just a shooter in this offense. I don't know if Hill is ever a player who will just take the ball and break it down, but does Hill have the ball in his hands more? That's something to keep an eye on, because that will make the adjustment for Copeland and Scola and Granger and George and Hibbert for everybody, I think, easier if Hill is able to take on more of those responsibilities. But, you know, we haven't even had a week of practice, so all of this is still evolving. And, you know, it may even take, you know, it may be December by the time we really get settled into, you know, okay, this is our rotation, this is what we do on offense, this is option number one, this is option number two, these are the lineups that work. You know, it may take a little bit of time because, you know, yet again we have almost a complete makeover of the bench, you know, the same thing we went through last season. So it may take a little bit of time. You can't rule that out.
And I don't want to sound like too much of a Debbie Downer here, because the bench is so much better than it was last year. I liked what Tom said on Cornrows earlier this week, that there was a story titled something to the effect of, the bench is better, we promise this time, for real. The Pacers are excited about it. I mean, and there's no question that that's the case. I'm actually totally on board with what you said there, that I would be all right if I'm a fan waiting for these guys to figure things out a little bit. Because we all remember what happened at the beginning of last year. We were already the tank after the first 10 games, Pacer fans, because the team was so miserable. And they got things turned around pretty quick. Now, these guys, I think, are going to take some time to get used to each other. Who's the biggest part of that? You mentioned George Hill as a role player. We're expecting Roy Hibbert to come out stronger than he did. But is there one guy you're keeping an eye on to really center things to a greater extent maybe than they did last year?
Well, I don't know if it's one person. This is a really balanced team without, you know, one standout star, at least offensively. For me, Jimmy, it's all mental. I'm wondering how guys are going to handle the log jams and the playing time and all that, because in talking to them, not one guy has, other than probably a little hint from Granger, not one guy has really expressed concern or, you know, doesn't seem consumed by their own personal agenda. Everyone is saying the right things, and so that has been the biggest thing to me. I still think it's something that we probably won't know until, like, December, you know, once really the rotation is settled, how people are going to handle their roles and their playing time, and whether or not everyone's going to be on board. That's why I think it's really important for this team to get off to a good start, unlike last season, because as we all know, the cliche goes, winning cures all. And I think it'll be easier for people to buy in that, you know, I'm not playing as much as I'd like, but we're winning and it's making a difference.
I'm down with that. Let's look at the Central for a second, just getting on the idea of winning being something that cures all. It's not going to be an easy task in the East this year. I think finally the Eastern Conference is tougher than the West from really top of the elite teams in there. I like the Nets more than a few, but the Chicago Bulls are going to be a factor as well. Derrick Rose is back, and we get a look at them on Saturday. And what's the Central dynamic look like with the Bulls being what they are and teams like the Pistons coming in to play a little bit too?
Yeah, that should be a much tougher division than it was last year. The Bulls didn't make a lot of other moves to get better, but Derrick Rose is all you need to do. But you look at what these talented young teams did in Cleveland and Detroit. I don't know that I would throw Milwaukee into that mix, but you know Milwaukee won't be a complete pushover. So it's a tough division night in and night out, and I think the Pacers went, off the top of my head, if memory serves, I think they were 13-3 within the division last year, 3-1 against the Bulls. You figure that the Bulls and Pacers will split this year 2-2. You might be looking at the Pacers going 11-5 or 10-6 just because of the strength of the Central. Even though the Pacers are better, they improved. They had a good offseason, but you know, just by virtue of schedule strength, you might see a 10-6 division record as opposed to 13-3. And then at the top of the division, obviously the Bulls and the Pacers could be neck and neck all season, competing for first place. And it might come down to, as things often do in the NBA, who can stay healthier.
What does that mean for teams outside of the division? Because obviously the Central, I think, is going to be much tougher than it has been in the past, but the Atlantic's going to be there. I mean, you've got the Nets, who are all revamped. They've got the big Russian throwing money everywhere. You got the Knicks, who are, I guess, the Knicks. I don't think they're going to be that good, but people are talking about them, so we might as well hear. And then at the top of the mountain, the Miami Heat. Hey, there's a whole lot of top-heavy talent in the East. Are the Pacers, even though they're better this year, going to have a harder time coming out at the top?
Probably so, because last year, by the end of the year, it was really only Miami and Indiana. The Knicks were kind of running on fumes in the playoffs, and the Nets, Joe Johnson had plantar fasciitis in his foot, were not to be taken seriously. They weren't as talented last year. I think there's something to what you said about, you know, the Western Conference has been so good for so long. It's been the better conference probably since Michael Jordan retired. And now you might see that flip because there is not a clear-cut favorite in the West. The Thunder look worse after they lost Kevin Martin. So all eyes, I think, a lot of eyes, not all eyes, obviously, because you still have the Lakers and Clippers and intriguing teams out there. But the Eastern Conference is going to come under more scrutiny than ever before because you have a really good top five. The elite clubs, you know, the Pacers, the Bulls, the Heat, the Knicks, and the Nets. And the Pacers are actually the only small market team in that group, by the way, which is interesting. But they should round out the sort of serious contenders in the conference. And I think, you know, the Heat still look like the favorites if Dwayne Wade is healthy. I think they're owed that respect, but I think the Pacers have every chance to have a really good regular season and win something like, you know, 60 games would not surprise me at all and compete for that top seed. I think it would be a big leap to get that top seed. I don't want to, you know, give anybody false hope or anything, but I think the Heat, the Pacers, and the Bulls all have a legitimate chance, especially Chicago, because the last 2 years that Derrick Rose was healthy, or at least semi-healthy, they did get the number one seed in the conference, not the Heat, which is something that people tend to forget.
I'm glad that you mentioned the Lakers, by the way, as an intriguing team for a different reason than you mentioned the Clippers, I assume.
always a story. It's like the Dallas Cowboys in the NFL or Duke and North Carolina in college basketball. It doesn't matter if they're down, up, sideways, flat on their face. People are going to be paying attention. So.
And I'm going to have a great time making fun of the Lakers throughout the season this year. Like, I can't wait for either of the games that the Pacers and the Lake Show play. This is going to be fun.
It will be fun. I thought it would be fun last year if Dwight Howard and Steve Nash and all those guys had stayed healthy. But the Lakers are not very popular around these parts after the NBA Finals, earlier last decade. With Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal and all their antics. And, I have to admit they've not been a very likable franchise for very long just because they have so many sort of outsized egos, from Phil Jackson to the ownership, to Kobe, to Artest and Odom and all these guys have been in there. It's been an interesting reality show for a long time.
All right, you mentioned he who must be not be named. We're not going to talk about Ron Artest, and we're going to get right off the Lakers. I want to get back to the Pacers on this and bring up Paul George in particular because he's an LA guy. I'm actually glad we went out there because there are all the Lakers fans who were all excited about stealing away Paul George next offseason, and that's not going to happen now because he's been locked up. He signed an extension, the second richest, I think, in franchise history. What does it mean for the Pacers that they got Paul George locked in for the next several years at a pricey sum?
Well, obviously, it was great for the Pacers. It was great for Paul George. It just made a lot of sense for both sides to get that extension done. And the amazing thing to me was that they completed it so far in advance of the NBA's deadline for players who are still playing under their first NBA contract, their rookie contract. The league has very specific rules with how you can do extensions with them. And after their third year, you can get an extension done before October 31st. But if you don't get it done before then the guy becomes a restricted free agent. Well, Paul George and the Pacers got it done a month in advance and even got it done before training camp. Which just worked out perfectly. So it's a great deal. Nobody knows yet how much it will pay him because you have to wait for next year's salary cap to be set. And, we'd have to see a copy of the contract, the fine print anyway. But it's going to be he's worth every penny, basically, because he's such a good guy. You don't have to worry about him, being a Steven Jackson, getting in trouble off the court. He's given absolutely no indication of problems on or off the court. He's just sort of a gem of a human being. And obviously, Larry Bird's been very clear, this contract means he is the face of the franchise. Paul has said, bring it on. I want to be the leader. I want to be the guy who's on the face of the media guide and who's out there in the community and being the spokesperson for the team. So, it was meaningful. I don't think there's anybody that really expected that extension not to happen, but the fact that it did is still going to give fans the peace of mind that, hey, he's going to be a Pacer for the next 5 years, guaranteed, and, after that we'll see, but it should be, they have the chance to do very special things in the next 5 years with Paul George.
What does this do to the Pacers' salary cap? Because that's my big question. Paul George signing for all this money, it's nice to lock him up. It's great to lock him up. I can't downplay that. But that being said, I want Lance back. I want to keep Born Ready in blue and gold. Roy Hibbert's already getting a lot of money. George Hill's at $8 million a year. And David West just re-upped. And there's no way Danny Granger's coming back. Lance Stephenson's kind of up in the air. And I've heard people saying that he might be in some other uniform after next offseason.
Stevenson, you mean?
Yeah, Lance. Is that what I said? Did I say Granger?
Yeah, I mean, Tim Donahue and I were talking about that there actually is a scenario in which Danny Granger and Lance Stevenson both are, allowed to sign elsewhere after the season. But Larry's been pretty clear that he likes Lance a lot and he wants Lance back. And if Danny is gone, you need a second wing. You need somebody to play shooting guard. Lance could be that guy. I think he needs to show improvement this season, but it's kind of a double-edged sword because if he does get better, if he does, you know, have a much better shooting touch, and people are hopeful of that, Lance is really hopeful of that, his value is going to go up, and it could actually price him out of, you know, the Pacers market. Now, Lance is saying all the right things. He says, I'm going to do whatever it takes. He said this on Media Day. I'm going to do whatever it takes to be back here with this organization. You know, that's what I want. So, but once clubs start dangling that money in front of you, you know, Peja Stojakovic once upon a time said, you know, heck yes, I want to be back here. I want to be a Pacer. And then free agency comes, and I think on the very first day, you know, he agrees to a huge deal with New Orleans. So you never know once these guys hit free agency. Yeah, I think they will be able to keep Lance at a semi-reasonable salary. They might have to, you know, move some more pieces around, like they did with Gerald Green, to make that happen. But I think the salary cap should go up next season, and that will be very helpful.
Yeah, I just want Lance back in the blue and gold. That's my only requirement, literally, for this next offseason to be a success. I think he has a chance to be a star, a legitimate lower-level star in this league. He and Paul George about the same age. It seems like it would be a perfect fit together to keep them both on the Pacers for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I still think Lance is going to be the X factor to this season. A lot of people think it's going to be Danny, and certainly Danny will play a key role, but I think if Lance comes back, this season and he sort of continues that move upward, that upward mobility that he had going last year in the postseason, I think the sky is really the limit for this team. I think a lot of people have forgotten how good a player Lance was at times in that run, and I don't think people appreciated his defense enough. He's not a great defensive player, but he's a lot better than people think. And I know that that's Paul George's forte, and Lance is certainly not at Paul's level, but he is a better-than-average defensive guard, and, you know, offensively he has skills, he has moves, defensively he works at it. He still will miss an assignment or take a silly shot at times and stuff like that, but I think Lance is going to be really good this year, and he's off the court. I think people just don't realize how ripped he is. I mean, this guy is so thick, so strong and thick. I mean, until you stand next to him, I mean, I said this last season that, you know, he's got a very solid base. Like, his legs, feet, thighs, you know, they're bigger than you think.
He's got a strong trunk. He's a big dude.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to stop him. You know, he said, I'm sort of a bully on the basketball court. And I think there's something to that. And, you know, on the off season, you know, you can tell that I'm not willing to say he's way bigger, but he's up in close to 230. And, you know, he's not around 230. I mean, he's going to move really well. So I just think he's going to be really solid this year. But the key for him is, can he improve that shot where, you know, he's at least an average three-point shooter? That's going to be really key for him. What he does well is he's an excellent, excellent finisher. He gets to the basket, and he makes them once he gets there. So he has a lot of positives as a player, and still really young, a lot of upside.
Yeah, Chris, I'm good if we close this thing on Lance Stephenson because, I mean, you said that there are people who don't appreciate how good he is. I'm not one of those people. He's my favorite player on this team, bar none, and I would really like to see him back. Before we let you go, anything to plug, promote, or otherwise pimp out before we let you take off?
No, we just encourage people to check out IndySportsLegends.com. We've got a lot of video up there for Media Day. If you'd like to see some of the new players, Hilton Armstrong, Donald Sloan, who I really enjoy talking to, and I don't think his name has come up today, but If you see Donald Sloan out around Indianapolis, say hi because he's a gem of a person. If you want to see some of those new guys, check out the Media Day video page on IndySportsLegends.com, and we'll have coverage from tomorrow night's preseason game between the Pacers and the Bulls. One of only two basketball games at Bankers Life Fieldhouse this preseason. So, Pierce, thanks for having me on the podcast today. I enjoyed it. Really appreciate it.
It was fun to have you. Again, that's Chris Goff, Pacers scribe, Indy Sports Legends, taking the time out on the Indy Cornrows Courtside podcast. Till next time, folks, good night, travel well. Thanks for listening. Until we meet again.